Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, January 17th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, introducing the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric with voice-activated sync and My Ford Touch, featuring gas-free power, zero CO2 emissions, and battery management technology that lets you go the distance. Learn more at FocusElectricPower.com. And by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now absolutely free at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Happy MLK, everybody.
And did you, and Sarah, you got a chance to actually review the speech. They played it on the radio this
morning. Yeah, on Talk of the Nation, which happened to be playing on my drive up this morning. I listened to the speech in its entirety, which I have done in the past, but I was trying to think of when was the last time, and it might have been when I was still in school.
Definitely was for me. For those not in the United States, much of the United States, not us, takes the day off
right.
on Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
You may have noticed that we don't have the day off today.
In celebration of the fight for civil rights.
Yes.
In the 1960s. So,
you know, although having days off is nice, and I'm sure a lot of our friends and former colleagues are enjoying their day off, there's a lot of news today.
There
so it
is,
kind of
actually,
works.
In a way, I'm glad we're here.
Yeah.
The biggest news across all the websites, in fact, even non-tech websites are talking about this. Apple boss Steve Jobs sent an email to employees saying he is taking a break to focus on his health. He says, at my request, the board of directors has granted me a medical leave of absence so I can focus on my health. I'll continue as CEO and be involved in major strategic decisions for the company. I have asked Tim Cook, who is the current COO, to be responsible for all of Apple's day-to-day operations. So third medical break for Steve Jobs in the past 10 years. In 1984, he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He took a break in 2004. He took another medical leave. When I say a break, medical leave, it's not exactly a break. He took medical leave again, most recently 2 years ago, when he was stepped down for 6 months. Mm-hmm. After that break in 2004, they came out with the iPhone. After the break, the last medical leave he took, they came out with the iPad. So it's not like Apple's missed a stride.
No. And it also sheds more light onto why wasn't Steve Jobs at the Verizon announcement in New York? Why has the launch of The Daily with Rupert Murdoch, which was supposed to be this week, I think, at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, has also been pushed back? This is probably why.
And Apple share is not reacting positively, of course, because of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. No trading on the New York Stock Exchange. But in Frankfurt, Apple shares took a hit.
Down as much as 8%, at least earlier in the day when I last checked.
And New York Times, there's an earnings call tomorrow.
That's right.
So we'll keep you up to date on that. But, you know, that'll probably bring the stock back around, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing, but it's like, it's the fact that Apple and Steve Jobs release this information today, I'm sure is on purpose. They're about to have an earnings call. People are expected the earnings call to have positive numbers. So this is hopefully buried news with the news of the company as a whole doing well.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots of questions about this on the earnings call. Now, the last time Steve Jobs took a medical leave, there was a lot of speculation about whether he would come back. He came back within 6 months and has been going fairly strong ever since. But to understand sort of the medical situation here, we are happy to have Dr. Lillian Harvey, Assistant Clinical Professor of Surgery at Hofstra School of Medicine in conjunction with the North Shore LIJ Healthcare System. Welcome, Lil. Folks may know her more as Dr. Mom in the chat room.
Hi, Tom, Sarah, everybody.
Hi, Lillian.
Thanks for coming on and helping us understand a little bit about the situation. Now, you are not Steve Jobs' doctor. You haven't seen the patient. You don't know anything about his health records, right?
That's correct. I know nothing that hasn't been already published beyond observations I've made looking at him in pictures that have been published and when he's had webcasts of presentations, looks like.
But one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is you can help us understand about pancreatic cancer and what kind of risks someone would face and what this might mean. In fact, you wrote a blog post the last time He went on medical leave back in 2009. Can you give us a little summary of what the situation might be?
Sure. What first thing people have to understand, there were two different kinds of pancreatic cancer. There's the kind that Patrick Swayze had that ran in Jimmy Carter's family. This is the kind that you normally hear about. People make maybe 6 months after diagnosis unless they're very lucky. There's a second kind of pancreatic cancer, and it has to do with the fact that the pancreas, besides secreting digestive hormones, also makes hormones. He's got the kind of cancer that causes that comes from the hormone-secreting cells. In his case, he has a tumor called carcinoid, which causes changes in blood pressure. It can cause literally you suddenly look like you're having a hot flash. You get a flushing reaction.
Now, is that more survivable than the first type that you mentioned?
Absolutely. 50% of people who have that kind of a diagnosis survive at least 5 years. Because normally the problem with pancreatic cancer is you don't know you've got it until it's so far advanced that there's too late to do anything about it. With the hormonal type of tumors, the hormones that are being secreted cause problems so early that they can catch this when the tumor's, say, the size of my pinky. So it's easy to cure.
Now, he was diagnosed with this a long time ago. Is he outperforming the average already?
Well, he was diagnosed in 2004. He'd put off surgery from, again, this was what was published. He put off surgery for a year trying to treat this with diet and with other treatments besides surgery. And he was operated on in 2005. The tumor was back by 2009 when he needed the liver transplant. So he had made his 5 years. Liver transplant is probably the only good treatment we have right now for people who have tumors recurring in their liver. We don't have good chemotherapy. We don't have really other ways to do it if it's spread out throughout the liver. So the answer is to remove the liver and put in a new one if you can do it.
And in a pancreatic cancer patient, after you've removed the liver, you know, what could we expect? What could cause a second need to leave your job?
The tumor's back.
And so does that mean that the liver transplant didn't work, or it only worked for a shortened period of time in those cases?
It's not that the liver transplant didn't work. It's that the tumor recurred. The criteria for doing a liver transplant in cancer patients are you can't have evidence of cancer anywhere else in your body. Because one, if you do, you're not going to survive anyway. Two, the medications you have to go on to keep your body from rejecting the new liver let the cancer grow and spread. It's going back. I don't know if you remember Mickey Mantle had a liver transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And he had it for primary liver cancer. They operated on him. They thought he was clear of cancer, put in a new liver, and tumor blossomed in his lungs and everywhere else within months, and he died because of the suppression of his immune system. When you see something like what's going on with Mr. Jobs, most likely the tumor's back.
And then, again, we don't know that that's true of Steve Jobs, and we don't know what's going on with him, but if that were the case in a cancer patient who's had the liver transplant, the tumor reoccurs, you know, what's the prognosis then?
It depends if they think he's a candidate for another liver transplant. The problem you have is part of the reason I feel that he didn't get the transplant done in California, and a lot of people made comments, why did he go to Memphis, was because not every institution will do liver transplants for the kind of cancer he has.
Mm.
There's not enough evidence out there to say that it's better than treating it medically. To be honest, we'll never get that kind of evidence. The tumor is rare enough. You'd be collecting patients for 20 years. To get that kind of evidence.
Gotcha.
So he went to a center that says, we will do a transplant for this kind of a condition. If it's back and they think it's nowhere else, they could try transplanting him again. The chances are not good. It's probably going to come back again.
And so then is it just chemo?
We don't have good chemo for this.
Yeah. So there's nothing else.
What about radiation treatments?
Same problem. We really don't have good radiation, good chemo. What you can do, depending on what's going on, is you can stick a catheter into the tumor deposits in the liver and either cook them with microwave radiation. You can literally put in liquid hydrogen, nitrogen slush and freeze them. It's controlling the local disease. None of those are curative. What you may do is buy him a year, two or three more years.
Mm-hmm.
What you're trying to do is buy time to hope that we develop something.
And this, of course, is just assuming that it's not already spread somewhere else.
Right, right.
That's the big problem.
Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, you know, all other speculation aside, it definitely points out the importance of cancer research and supporting cancer research in all of its various forms, not just pancreatic cancer. And before we let you go, Lil, I want to ask one last question. Going away from the disease aspect of this and more of the privacy aspect of this, with most people, it wouldn't be a question. He's an individual who has the right to medical privacy. Because he's a head of a company, a lot of people are saying, you know, he needs to talk to his investors and let them know more what's going on. He needs to make it more public so that people who are interested in buying Apple stock can know what's going on. Do you have an opinion about what should be made public and what shouldn't?
I think if something's going on to the point where it's going to impair his ability to do his work, that probably needs to be at least disclosed to the SEC and probably the stockholders. Now, I will say with what he's got, he's likely to function perfectly well for quite a long time, even if they can't do anything about it. Eventually, if this is recurrent tumor in his liver will fail. He'll slip off into a coma. And that, you know, will be the pre-terminal event. But he could go a very long time. What's more concerning to me is the weight he's continued to lose. After the liver transplant, I'm sure the people in the chat room noticed, I kept saying, he's not gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
You expect somebody with a liver transplant who's successful to have put weight back on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Jason's got the picture I asked him to pull up, recent picture of him.
Yeah, here's one from a couple of months ago, I think.
Look at him. And more important, look at his hands. Tom, pick up your hand and look at the palm of your hand. Look at the muscle pad right here. It's called the thenar eminence.
Mm-hmm.
It's thick and fleshy. That does not go away unless you're paralyzed or you're starving.
Mm-hmm.
Now look at his hand. It's gone.
I see what his you're saying, yeah.
If you looked at him with shorter sleeves, you can see the bones in his arms. He's losing muscle in areas where he's presumably exercising every day. And that's a very bad sign. And he just never gained the weight back after the transplant. I mean, look at him right here.
Yeah.
He's got no muscles in his arm and his hands. He's lost the muscle on either side of his face here. His face is sunken in. You can't tell if he's losing his hair, which is a sign of basically being cachectic, malnourished, because he keeps his hair cut very short. But he's never looked right after the transplant.
Well, hopefully, I hope 100% for him and his family's sake that everything goes well and he returns from medical leave as soon as possible. And Dr. Mom, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and help us understand not just about Steve Jobs, but a little opportunity to understand a little bit about pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Glad to help you.
All right. We'll see you in the chat room.
Okay.
Steve and Chad, Dr. Mom.
All right. Dr. Lillian Harvey, Assistant Clinical Professor of Surgery at Hofstra School of Medicine, in conjunction with the North Shore LIJ Healthcare System. Appreciate that information. Not very cheering information.
Not very cheering. And I think we can all agree that we sit around and talk about this, and there's a certain amount of feeling really uncomfortable about talking about anyone's medical condition, which is a very private issue. However, and this is a debate that's been going on for years, ever since shareholders were like, hey, wait a second, we need to know if Steve Jobs is not doing well because the success of Apple is so closely tied to Steve Jobs, the man, more so than I think any other company, at least in the tech world. So, you know, it's a tricky situation here.
Right. But when you think about a big picture, you know, in 100 years, Apple isn't going to have Steve Jobs any more than Microsoft is going to have Bill Gates, and that's just the way
it
is.
Every CEO is going to leave a company.
But shareholders aren't thinking about 100 years from now.
No, they're not.
thinking about this year.
Probably not.
So. Steve Wozniak told CNET today that the news actually frightened him because he did not expect it. But he says, hey, if Steve is tired and wants a bit more normal life, more power to him. So Woz is, of course, 100% supportive. Goldman Sachs also making news today outside of the tech world, saying that they're going to offer those Facebook shares only to non-U.S. citizens. These are the shares of the 1.5 billion that would be invested into Facebook as a single investor, but then backed by multiple Goldman Sachs clients. That was about to get them in trouble because a private company can only have less than 500 investors, or they have to be made public.
So, but what's kind of funny about this story is Goldman Sachs says, you know, we're just worried about the media's scrutinized, over scrutiny by the media. So we're just going to
Come on.
Just, we're just going to talk to foreign investors. We won't even deal with the U.S. because of the media.
Well, there's no media outside the United States?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
well, there's no SEC.
They don't care about the media because the media is talking about what the latest development in the story. It has nothing to do with the media. It's the SEC.
Yeah, they care about the media shining attention on it to catch the attention of the SEC.
Right.
Exactly.
We're still going to talk about it, Goldman Sachs.
Also, new privacy concerns for Facebook at the same time as they announced that they're going to allow third-party app developers API access to your address and phone number if you give permission.
Right. And so you go, well, I can choose not to give permission. But didn't Facebook have an issue not that long ago, something that we talked about on this very show, where there were certain developers who were scraping that information in nefarious ways that then were suspended by Facebook? So it goes to show you that you can't just trust any developer.
But those were developers that were not adhering to the license agreement to use that API and to create apps for the Facebook platform. They were going ahead and selling data to marketing companies, and that was strictly prohibited. So it's those
strictly prohibited, but they did it anyway.
Right. So, yes.
So, your information is still
but
been
in this
captured.
Case, you still have the opportunity to decline when it asks you, hey, is this something that you want to share with this application? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's great. In fact, I think that, you know, much like Sophos suggests, it should only be Facebook verified applications that should even have the ability to request this application. And then, of course, it's still on you whether or not you're going to give it. And then, of course, it's still on you whether or not you actually even give your real phone number. Somebody on Twitter has already changed their phone number to 650-543-4800, which is the Facebook customer service line.
Oh, that's funny. I think a much better solution than to say, no, I decline, and let's just hope that works out okay, is just to not fill in those fields.
Yeah, I never
filled
them in.
Facebook's whole
thing
is not needing to email each other because of their whole new, the world of modern chatting does not rely on email. I mean, why do we even have those fields in Facebook anymore?
A lot of people use them as contact info. If you're using WebOS, for instance, it can populate your contact fields with your Facebook friends. That's a nifty thing it can do, but I've never trusted it.
Oh, so no.
Even when Facebook was like, you have to be part of a network to get involved before they opened up registration, I didn't give it that stuff.
Right.
Android has the same thing where it'll integrate your contacts. And then that way, and much like Facebook says where, oh, the contact information is the property of the contact and not yours. The other side of that is, well, then that other person can update the contact information. It's automatically updated on your phone in that sense.
Yeah. On the other side of the story, you don't really have to give any kind of personal information out for you to be hacked if you're living in the public enough and using common security questions. George Bronk, 23, has pleaded guilty to charges he broke into the email accounts of thousands of women, scouring them for nude photos that he then posted on the internet. And the way he got into the accounts that he was able to get into was going over their Facebook pages and looking for answers to common security questions like, where were you born?
Like, what's
your
mom's
first name?
Pet's name?
Yeah, all
and
of
it's
that
probably
stuff.
In her album that was like, early life with my pet's
spot. Yeah, exactly. My hometown
from 1981. That's probably her first dog. Okay, let's try that. You know, I have to say, I'm surprised that this is the first time I've heard of somebody doing this. It's actually pretty smart.
This was
and not really rocket science either.
This happened when Sarah Palin's Yahoo Mail was hacked. It's the same exact, you know, way. And
what's the right way to answer one of those security questions? Because more and more companies are making you answer them. I always opt out of answering them. I'm like, you know what? I lose my password. Lose my password.
I answer nonsensically. So I have like, you know, what was your first elementary school? Well, the answer is Briscoe Elementary.
But you never answer.
But that's not my answer. My answer is something that makes no sense. So even someone who knew me really well wouldn't know what my answer was.
There's a couple things you could do. You could actually take Briscoe and just open up your terminal and type MD5 space Briscoe Elementary, and it would give you an MD5 hash of Briscoe Elementary. You could do the same thing with SHA-1. There's
but if I know Briscoe, can't I do that too?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. There's that, and then there's also just giving random junk. I just encountered this twice where I created an account over at Sprint, had the same issue, and they're like, "What do you want the answer to security question to be?" And the ones that they offered me were junk, right? So I just typed in a bunch of a very secure password. Recently, I had to do the same thing the other day when I opened a Bank of America account, and it was very upsetting where they limited it to 20 characters for the answer, no special characters. So annoying.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. But, but then Bank of America also has that extra level of security where you've got your little icon. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh, that pictogram.
Yeah. It's always made me feel better anyway.
You can never man in the middle of that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No one will know my icon.
Finally, before we take a break and get to our discussion stories for the day, although these have been pretty good discussions right off the top, Universal and Sony Music have decided to leave the 1960s. They both are going to start selling digital copies of music the day it's released to radio instead of the old-fashioned way where they would release something to radio, let it build up some heat for 6 weeks, and then sell it. That worked in the days when the only way you could get that song was walking into a record store and buying the 45. It doesn't work so well in the days of BitTorrent.
No, certainly not. And, I feel like that's why so many songs get so much attention is because being able to trade it, in the dark channels of the internet is the only way that anybody can trade a song that they really like, that they heard on the radio.
So you think that because you have to go through the back channels, it ends up creating more word of mouth?
I do.
Like, hey, guess what I just pirated?
It makes it that much more exciting. I mean, that's definitely part of illegal file trading.
Yeah.
Well, for some people.
All I want to say is, movie industry, take note, because this is no different than, the DVD release of a movie that's in the theater.
Mm-hmm. That's true, which is still a concept that people are having a hard time.
Right, but if the music industry can get behind, oh, hey, we're going to release the single on the radio and also allow you to buy the MP3, come on, guys. It's very similar.
David,
the only difference is the music on the radio is quote-unquote free,
right?
Whereas you have to pay for a movie ticket.
That's true.
Maybe we should just get rid of the price of the movie tickets. I'm joking.
Yeah, you might be on something. David Joseph, the chief executive of Universal Music, said, "Wait is not a word in the vocabulary of the current generation. It's out of date to think that you can build up demand for a song by playing it for several weeks." He seems to be blaming the generation in a way. Like, well, these people are impatient. We've got to serve them if we want to sell. It's like, no, wait has never been in the vocabulary of any generation of music consumer. It's just they didn't have any other choice.
Well, right. Yes, but this is also the generation that's brought up with, megabit broadband.
Yeah.
So, right.
If wait had been in their vocabulary, the 6 weeks of building up heat wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
It's because they were impatient to get the song that it made them rush into the store to buy it in the first place.
I think Sarah's onto something that by the very nature of you having to pirate it to get access to own that content before they allow you to buy it legally does stir up a lot of viral marketing, just because of the word of mouth. Because, oh, how cool am I that I was able to pirate it and you weren't.
I can
hook you up with this song that you, may not have known where to go to Pirate Bay or whatever.
There's a blog on Pitchfork Media's site that is all about reviewing and rating early leaks. All its purpose is to build up, kind of promotion around this thing. And it's actually really effective. Like, you read those reviews and you get a little excited about the release because it's not out yet.
Studios have to know this. Look at the latest Harry Potter that was, what was it, like the first act?
You think that was an unofficial but official leak?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, this episode of Tech News Today and all of our coverage of CES earlier this month is brought to you by Ford, introducing the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric with voice-activated sync and My Ford Touch. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric is an all-electric vehicle. It's been getting great reviews, too. No gasoline engine in here. It's powered by a lithium-ion battery with high-voltage capacity, recharged by plugging it into an electrical outlet. You can just plug it right into a 120-volt outlet or a 240-volt outlet if you get the electric vehicle supply equipment. It has a regenerative braking system for recharging on the go, and it will offer miles per charge that's competitive with other electric vehicles on the market. They say it's going to provide you more than enough power to between charges to drive around town, do your errands, go to work, do your commute, all of that stuff. And it may actually be cheaper depending on how expensive electricity is in your area. It's often cheaper than gasoline, especially if you charge at night. So the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric. Check it out. Features, of course, sync with My Ford Touch, responds to your voice commands, lets you operate your car, change the way the car is lit, play your music, send and receive text messages, all while keeping your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel. And sync, along with its 10,000 voice commands, includes battery management for the Focus Electric. If you want to learn more, visit FocusElectricPower.com. And thanks to Ford for supporting our special coverage of CES 2011 earlier this month, as well as Tech News Today. On to Android. And a new study is out. Computer World assembled a straightforward statistical comparison of update performance across the Android carriers. This goes back to the Samsung dispute where they are not getting Froyo yet on what is otherwise probably the premier Android handset right now. You've got an Epic, right?
I've got an Epic 4G.
Which is a Galaxy S phone.
Which is a Galaxy S Samsung phone. And it's a great piece of hardware, except the GPS is bunk, which is why it's going back tomorrow. But other than that...
I thought you said you were getting used to the way that it's crappy.
You know, I was getting used to the way it's crappy, except for... And I get so frustrated with the GPS when it doesn't work. And then when I don't use the GPS, I'm like, oh, I might be able to live with this. And no.
But you're on 2.1.
Well, you're right. I'm on 2.1. I'm on Eclair. I've been promised when I bought it. I was told, oh, it doesn't
Eclair,
have Froyo.
That's last year's operating system.
I know. And Gingerbread's out. So it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even get Froyo. It's like, but I was sold the phone saying, oh, it's coming soon. And we were told, oh, December 26th, you're going to get it. And now that's not the case.
Apparently, it's up to the handset makers. HTC fared better than its competitors. Study found roughly half of HTC's Android phones were updated to Android 2.2. That's Froyo. Motorola and Samsung came in next with 15.4% for Motorola, 11.1% for Samsung. The rest of the vendors compared in the study, Dell, LG, and Sony, were even worse. And, you know, thanks to a listener on Twitter, Graybix, who replied me a forum posting at XDA Developers, which is...
An anonymous forum
anonymous,
posting.
Exactly. So take it with a grain of salt. But the way this poster explains it, the reason for this is there are three kinds of updates handled by the carriers. There is a critical update for something that's, you know, the phone's broken.
The phone's about to burst into flames.
Maintenance updates, which are minor bug fixes and other things. And then feature updates, which change what the software can do. HTC, according to this post, and I'd like to know if anybody knows this to confirm it, HTC and Motorola both consider an update of the firmware a maintenance update. And so they only charge the carriers a small maintenance fee for delivering that update to the device.
Mm-hmm.
Because the handset makers are the ones who charge for delivering that update, right?
Right.
Think about it. Apple is the one who provides the update for the iPhone in iOS, not AT&T. So it's the same sort of situation. Apple, I don't know if they charge AT&T anything for that, but they probably don't. Well, then, no, they probably don't because it's not over the air.
Oh, that's true.
You'd think the carriers would be charging for the bandwidth.
That's the big difference here.
Yeah, and in a lot of cases, at least on Verizon, it was OTA. And I've done it without over the air, but then again, that was routing anyway, so I guess not.
Yeah. So anyway, with most manufacturers such as HTC and Motorola, the fine is considered a maintenance upgrade. Samsung, however, considers... a firmware update, a feature update, and requires the carriers to pay a per-device update fee for each incremental Android update. And apparently all the carriers are working in unison to tell Samsung they don't want to pay that. They don't have to pay it for their HTC and Motorola phones. They don't want to pay it for the Samsung phones. And so they're all universally saying we're not going to deliver an over-the-air update of Android 2.2.
I want to know why Samsung thinks that it can just charge more than everyone else does.
Right, right. Charging for the free operating system, too.
Give me one
Android's
good reason.
Source.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Open source is another big point here. It's like, why is Samsung charging more than others are already charging
Samsung
for open source software?
Does do a lot to modify the operating system to make it unique. You know, for example, one of the little things I like about their version of Android is that, you know, you can swipe up to unlock, but if you have a message waiting, you can swipe down and go straight to the message. But you know what? I've seen custom ROMs that have cool stuff like that too. So, yeah, I guess that is the beauty of Android is that you get those cool custom ROMs. But at the same time, when you put it
in the
carrier's hands,
also the curse of Android,
and it's actually not even the carrier. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
why do the carriers need to be involved? You got Wi-Fi in that thing. Why can't Samsung say, you know what? We're going to make it available, and it's only available over Wi-Fi because your carrier is being a bitch.
But, well, this isn't the open source version of Android. This is the compiled version of Android.
But Samsung could still deliver it over Wi-Fi on an internet connection. Right? Directly? Just cut out the middleman?
Yeah.
Come on, Samsung.
Yeah, well, but this is the Samsung that wants to
Samsung
charge for the update.
Money.
So
Stop hiring dancers for your keynotes.
You know what's great about this, though, is that it's like if Samsung wants too much money and all the carriers say,
no,
we're not going to play along, and then Samsung's phones end up being crappy in the consumer's eyes because they're way behind, then they're going to be forced to play nicely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I would, okay, Samsung, if that's the way you want to play, I would personally pay you if you're just going to go ahead and give me a download and I can install it myself.
Right.
You know, I'll eat Humble Pie and be like, fine, right?
What does Humble Pie taste like? Anyway?
I have no idea. But
probably really bad.
But you know what? Sorry, Samsung, this is going back to Sprint. I'm just going to have to get myself an HTC Evo 4G. That's just
how
it is.
And you'll always have a faster Android update, at least according to this story. New York Times has an excellent article, which we can't begin to replicate. It would take us the rest of the show to read this out to you. But check it out. William J. Broad, John Markoff, and David E. Sanger wrote this article for the New York Times. Israeli test on worm called crucial in Iran nuclear delay. And essentially the upshot of this is the New York Times is claiming Israel and the United States worked together to develop Stuxnet specifically to target Iran.
And specifically to, I mean, they pretty much said, hey, we can delay this like 5 years or so.
This is what everybody expected, but right. They're saying, no, we've talked to some people who know.
Yeah.
And they're talking off the record, but they're saying, yeah, Stuxnet was designed in the United States by an Idaho company who was working with Siemens to test for vulnerabilities of those cylinders that were the same cylinders used in the Iranian nuclear devices.
Right, and if you'll remember, Stuxnet is the worm that targets specifically centrifuges used for enriching uranium. And it's really interesting that this is actually one of the most sophisticated worms ever to date, because it exploits so many what we call zero-day vulnerabilities that have not been published beforehand, not only from Siemens but from other manufacturers as well. And when we first saw this story, like, we speculated that this is just beyond the capabilities of a single hacker, and that it would take, you know, almost, you know, like state funding or something like that. So it seems like that is the current speculation.
Yeah. The tale told by the New York Times story seems to imply that the Idaho National Laboratory, which is part of the Energy Department, may have taken the information from the vulnerabilities that they worked out with Siemens, which is just a way of saying, hey, we use these cylinders too. We want to find out what the vulnerabilities are so we can patch them. And then handed that over to another agency, which then developed the worm. Mm-hmm. That was then given to Israel. And Israeli Mossad agents would then get it into Iran, either over the internet or maybe with USB dongles and infiltration.
Can I read a sentence from this New York Times article, which makes it like the best future screenplay for a Hollywood movie ever? All right. The computer program also secretly recorded what normal operations at the nuclear plant looked like, then played those readings back to plant operators like a pre-recorded security tape in a bank heist, so it would appear that everything was operating normally while the centrifuges were actually tearing themselves apart.
Yeah, they had no idea.
I've seen stuff like this in movies.
Oh, totally,
man,
yeah.
In the middle attack, you're like, everything's cool. The centrifuges are like banging
back
and forth.
Smoking. And,
you know,
yeah.
Scraps of metal falling off of them. And
no,
these are
readings are fine.
These are centrifuges from like the 70s. You have to read this because it's so
it is
born identity.
It's
in fact,
amazing.
What's really interesting I find about this is I'm sure these stories have happened for decades and decades. And supposedly, you know, the way that this story reads is that this is an operation that comes out of the tail end of the Bush administration, and that that things like this we would never have known about until like decades later after FOIA requests and things become not, you know, top secret anymore. But since, you know, you've got things like WikiLeaks, you know, finding that, oh, hey, there were, what is it called? Not injunctions, but, stops at customs trying to keep Siemens equipment going back into Iran, or even just, you know, the ability to reverse engineer malware is why we know about this as the operation is currently happening,
right.
Which is so wicked sci-fi cool.
Yeah, apparently these centrifuges were damaged in 2009. And have set back the Iranian program several years, which, and again, this New York Times story is very good at pointing out the rhetoric about Iran's nuclear program up until that time was very insistent that we needed to do something now, mm-hmm. and then suddenly slacked off and mm-hmm. said, yeah, we need to do something.
Yeah, but maybe we've done something.
Yeah. But showing knowledge that we've already done something. And both an Israeli government official and Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State of the United States, have both recently made a point of talking about how, hey, Iran's nuclear program has been set back because they had an accident.
Yeah.
Don't know anything about
centrifuges.
It.
Right. And then, Iran's trying to order 900 and some pieces of
984.
Broken, 984.
Which is exactly the number in Stuxnet. That it would be able to command at one time.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says that this kind of cyber war is being overblown. It's being overblown-ded. Overblown-inated.
Derp.
That is Monday talk for you.
Yeah, it is. They're saying that, look, there is cyber war going to happen. This is going to be part of our ability to conduct warfare against each other in the future. We're going to beat each other up on the internet, but the rhetoric is getting out of control. and it's not helping things to make it sound like everything is about to go under.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, that's typical media for you, is to overblow and say, ah, it's cyber warfare because Darren posted on Sarah Lane's Facebook and said, neener, neener, neener.
Well, you know what, though? This really is cyber warfare.
What the OECD is saying here is, look, if you say an attack and you mean a phishing scam,
right,
or if you say an attack and you mean Stuxnet,
yes,
and you're using the same words, that's not helpful.
Right.
Let's limit what we're talking about to a Stuxnet situation so that we can actually talk about this sensibly. Because a lot of the statistics being thrown around about cyber war include, you know, Viagra scams in their statistics. And that just makes the problem sound a lot worse.
I mean, there's a big difference between the Viagra scams or, say, like anonymous DDoSing PayPal's blog or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Netflix is going to get itself in a cyber war. Jamie Odell, director of product management at Netflix, said that is responding to some enraged users who found out the company has removed the ability to add to DVD queues from your connected devices, like your tablets and your phones. Odell said, "We're doing this so we can concentrate on offering you the titles that are available to watch instantly. Further, providing the option to add a DVD to your queue from a streaming device complicates the instant watching experience and ties up resources that are better used to improve the overall streaming functionality."
I finally see what it is. It's because when you're on your 360 and you're browsing the catalog and you're like, ooh, I want to get that. They don't want to say, look what you can't have right now.
So they just remove that stuff from the catalog
remove the ability to go ahead and add it to your DVD queue from the device that you can stream it on so that you're not thinking, oh, I love this Roku
What you can actually get, basically.
But then you're going to look like they don't. I mean, because the other way they did it was, hey, they have a lot of stuff. Oh, I can't stream it? Well, maybe I'll just add it to my DVD queue.
Right.
Now it just looks like they don't have stuff. It actually becomes more apparent what they don't have.
I mean, obviously Netflix wants to go to a streaming model. I mean, that's very obvious. But as long as they're still offering DVDs, mm-hmm. the DVD model, what, $1 more a month or something? I mean, that's still an option for everybody. To say, if you're on a mobile device, we don't want you to be able to add to your queue with something that is available on our service is just irresponsible. Yeah. I mean,
are they removing the ability on, like, for example, an Android app because you can't stream it on Android?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I think it's somewhat ridiculous to say, if you're visiting the Netflix website from your mobile device,
then the rules are
different.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at my Netflix app right now, and I can add things to my queue.
Does Netflix consider the iPad a mobile device?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you say Netflix app, or is that Safari?
No, this is Netflix app.
Okay.
This is the app. And they did say, yes, from your PC, you will still be able to add things to your queue.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly which apps this is affecting, but it was an announcement on the blog. They haven't actually implemented it yet, and they're already facing the rage.
Oh.
Expect a U-turn shortly.
Yeah,
that's my prediction.
Or at least just a much better explanation of why this needs to happen to appease the masses, the angry hordes.
Finally, our requirement to report a certain amount of iPhone rumors. We've been falling behind in January. Vodafone Germany says that they've spotted white iPhone 4 listings in its inventory system. Well, they don't say it. Electronista says they've spotted it in Vodafone's listings. Also, some rumors out of the chip makers. Apple Insider says they've talked to some chip makers that Apple is going to make a dual-core Cortex A9-based design to replace the current single-core Cortex A8-based A4 processor. So the next iPad and iPhone might have a dual-core A5 in it.
Also, better display.
Yeah.
And also a rumor of a vibrating motor.
So like a rumbler.
Yeah, vibrating motor, not the other way around.
So you can get more than just a little. Just the little vibrate.
Well, wait, can't you shift it to vibrate rather than, it's like basically the equivalent of mute. But no, this would be different for gaming.
Even better. I want to see a mashup where, and it's sad that we had to take it out of the lineup for time, but go look up the iPhone plug that will plug into your 3.5mm jack so that you can communicate with sensors and then mod it to work with your N64 rumble pack.
There you go. Rumble pack on your iPhone.
That's what I want.
Well, actually, they'll already have the rumble motor, so you get dual rumbles
with
your dual cores.
I love that. More rumble.
They cancel each other out.
All right. We've got to take a quick moment to thank MailRoute. If you want no more spam, go to MailRoute.info right now. You just have to be able to edit your MX record, have all of your email sent to MailRoute, and they will remove the spam, the viruses, all the bad stuff. Just send you the good stuff. It will resurrect an otherwise useless email address. If you're like me, you have an old domain and you've got an email address on there that is just littered with spam, MailRoute can bring it back from the dead. I've done it. AceDetect@Subbrilliant.com now works. They have different plans for different folks. If you're one person or 50,000 users, they have got a plan for you. It's $2 per user per month for 10 users. And because of demand from the Twit Army, they now have a new service for individual users, less than $30 per user per year for single users. Give them a try. Visit MailRoute.info and sign up and get your email clean again. On to the news fuse. I'm dead. Looks like you can expect a webOS netbook alongside phones and tablets from HP. HP recently published a set of training materials for mobile carriers to help educate salespeople about the technical merits of webOS and Palm devices. The specific form factors listed in the training manual were phones, tablets, and netbooks. We will find out more about what this actually means at the February 9th HP announcement.
I've got some good news. Australia's Gotham Dating Partners website has a profile for you.
Already?
But if you haven't filled one out, no worries, mate. Do you like that?
That was good.
I practiced it all day.
Nice.
They plan to create a profile on you anyway, and they're going to base it on publicly available information from social networking sites and email registries and mailing lists and marketing surveys and government census records, even real estate listings and business websites.
Sounds like a horrible idea.
The Australian Privacy Commissioner says this is not a good privacy practice.
Oi.
We actually didn't practice that.
That was awesome.
That's just because, yeah.
That's just how good we are.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Sarah.
Yes.
You think that Swiss bank account of yours is going to hide your finances from prying eyes?
I don't have any
money.
Oh,
well, if you did, WikiLeaks wouldn't think so. The leak site has a list of account holders from the bank Julius Baer and Julian Assange promises a, quote, full revelation. Now, the leaker, former banker Rudolf Elmer, thinks that the Swiss system is totally damaged, and he's also being headed to court to face, charges of coercion and violating Swiss secrecy laws. So I guess that means, will the IRS be able to read these on their computers?
That's a very good question that many Swiss bank account holders are wondering right
IRS,
now.
IRS, check your firewall.
Last week, California's Supreme Court held that police officers may lawfully search mobile phones found on arrested individuals without obtaining a search warrant. The court reasoned mobile phones like wallets fall under search incident to arrest exceptions to the Fourth Amendment. That exception, however, does not apply to passwords or items not on your person. So keep your phone in a bag and encrypt it. Password protect it, keep it off your person, and you'll be fine.
The handbag industry is so behind this.
Yeah. New
man
iPhone
purses
cases,
for all.
Huge. Yes. With zippers.
All right. I want to tell you a little story about a man named Stephen Archer who doesn't believe in BitTorrent. No, no. That kind of easy piracy is apparently for the lazy if you're a man like Stephen Archer, who was arrested late last week after being caught tunneling into his local Greenville, Tennessee GameStop store.
Not SSH.
From an empty adjoining building. He made off with almost, wait for it, $300 in cash and around $5,400 in games. He also left a trail of evidence and was arrested by
shovels.
Detective Pat Hankins and charged with felony burglary. Stephen Archer, better luck next time.
We should have a TNT award for
that. At least he didn't pirate.
Yeah, that would be bad. So earlier this month, Enterprise Rent-A-Car announced that it would be soon offering the Chevy Volt at the company's Mark Christopher Auto Center in Ontario, California. But what are you to do when there's no tank to fill up? Well, when you return the car, unlike the gas equivalents, you don't actually have to bring it back with a full charge. They're installing charging stations for you. It's a little good stuff there if you're renting a Volt.
Angry Birds is over, people.
What?
Welcome to your new reigning free iPhone champ, Bubble Ball, a physics simulator coded by Robert Ney, a 14-year-old from Spanish Fork, Utah. The game challenges players to use objects and gravity to guide a ball to its destination. Last Thursday, it topped the iPhone free chart and had more than 400,000 downloads on that day alone. It's been on top ever since.
Hey, you completed a level successfully.
That's how fun
it
is.
You know, Tom does that on camera. That was level 2. He can't beat level 3.
I can't beat level 3.
Yeah. Bubble ball.
Not backwards to the camera.
Just what I need. Another Angry Birds, but with bubbles. ComScore's new search results are in, and they're pretty much the same as what we reported. last time. Slight rise for Google, slighter rise for Bing, drop for Yahoo, all movement less than a percentage point, meaning nothing is really all that significant. Although, I have heard, and maybe some of you have as well, that Bing has been outperforming Google at search, but I would have to use Bing and Google and be comparing those on a regular basis. So I'm not sure that I can weigh in on this. What about you guys?
You just keep using Google as you do, because Tom's already pledged that for the next 30 days, he's only using Bing.
It was a week.
Oh, did
I guess it's 30 days. The next 30 days, I have changed Chrome's default search, which Chrome is now my primary browser, mm-hmm. to Bing.
But don't you have to be searching for the same thing regularly on both,
yes.
to be able to make a comparison?
Well, considering both of you do TNT, you're looking at some story research, he's looking at the same story you guys might come up with different stuff.
I don't even think that's it. I do very similar searches regularly for stuff,
mm-hmm.
And so I think I'll be able to make a comparison, like, hey, I'm looking for this, why am I not finding it? So, you know,
okay.
I'm going to give
all
it a
right.
try out.
Well...
Going big.
In 30 days, we'll check back.
I'll be in
see how the Bing
tears.
Project.
No. Maybe I won't. Actually, I've, if you're right, then I won't be. I'll be like, this. I'm sticking with it.
I think it's a good experiment.
A Pac-Man reality TV show is coming to the United States.
Wait, you're going to have to say that one again. It's a
yes.
what now?
Deadline Hollywood is reporting that Merv Griffin Entertainment has hammered out a deal with Namco Bandai to redevelop a reality TV show based on Pac-Man.
Hmm.
What?
Pac-Man's actually old enough to rent a car now, actually.
I don't. Where do I start?
They call it something big and crazy, like Wipeout or Fear Factor. They want to, quote, take what Pac-Man is and bring it to life, to bring what is essentially the world's biggest game of tag to television.
So people eat a lot and run from ghosts?
I don't know.
Sounds like... I don't know.
Maybe it's just a bunch of kids... eating power pellets, running around in the dark, running from ghosts.
Listen.
Huh? I think it's going to be scantily clad women in bikinis, mm-hmm. Chasing after nerds, who have to eat big cookies.
Sign me up.
Before they can turn around and tag them.
I don't understand why they have to bring Pac-Man into this stupid idea.
If this is a Japanese game show that is coming to the States, sign me up. But otherwise, I don't have the highest
Fear
hopes.
Factor had a good run. They had some scantily clad women jumping off boats or
See?
Whatever that show
exactly.
was about. But it's over. Isn't it?
Actually, Miss Pac-Man was pretty scantily clad. I think all she wore was a bow.
That's true.
Well.
Wait for this. That's the sequel.
In that case, I look forward to the new show.
On to the calendar.
On to the calendar. Listen up, Canadians, because you've got only 2 weeks left to tell Parliament how you feel about the Canadian DMCA. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm referring to the Bill C-32 Legislative Committee, who invited Canadians to provide their views on the upcoming bill. There's only 2 weeks left, you know, just in order to tell them their thoughts. They're trying to get the word of the people to weigh in and help them make an informed decision. I will note that, at least on a Boing Boing article about this, somebody who is anonymous but says they're Canadian said, hey, I tried emailing and I got back this form letter saying, thanks for your submission, and made them feel like, you know, is anyone really listening? Is anyone really reading this form? Better that than nothing. So we have to hope that they are.
Fight the good fight.
Fight the good fight. Go Canada. Onward. Also, Builders. Skype's acquisition of Quick, now complete.
Yep, on Friday.
So
that was quick.
Yeah.
Oh, Monday jokes.
Oh, wow. I love it.
On to the email. tnt@twit.tv.
First email from Michelle L., who says, hey, TNT, regarding Apple stopping newspapers from giving away a free app if their subscriber pays for a print version, these companies have other options. They can give the subscriber a link to a PDF file that then could be read on any electronic device. Granted, that means storing them on their own servers, but it's an option. For some reason, I don't think it's Apple trying to get money in this case. If so, why do they allow Kindle and Nook software on their devices when they don't get the book sales?
I have an answer to that.
There has to be something else to it. I have a feeling Apple's in negotiations with these publishers for subscriptions and may even be coming out with a new app called iMags to service this industry. It just doesn't seem like Apple to cut themselves out of the market when they could just possibly give people more of a reason to buy their hardware. Just my 2 cents.
The reason Kindle and Nook software on the device is because there is no built-in bookstore
right.
that Apple could get a cut of. You have to go to Safari and mm-hmm. to the web to buy your Kindle and Nook books, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, the app just gives you an easy way to do that. That's
and it seems like what the dispute over is subscriber information. whether who gets to handle the subscriber information. Apple is very protective of its users' privacy, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But the newspapers are saying, hey, we need that information to sell on. That's how we sell newspapers, is we use subscriber information to build advertising lists. We want that information out of you, Apple. And we also want to be able to give subscribers a free subscription, and Apple's like, you can't do that. So there's a lot more going on behind the scenes than just, can they give a subscriber a link to a PDF file? In fact, that's not even the best way to do it. There's things like Zinio or The Economist, which I subscribe to. What they do is they say, look, if you're a subscriber, go to our website and log in, authenticate yourself as a subscriber. Then when you get the app, all you have to do is log in as that authenticated subscriber at that same account, and we'll give you free access to all your newspapers.
And it's the same magazine?
Yeah, exactly the same.
It's like e-statements versus paper statements. Can you turn off paper?
You have to get The Economist in paper. So you still have to catch. They're very thin these days.
Yeah. That's not helping.
All right. Finally, Kent writes in and says, hey, all, loving the show. On the story about RIM, would this be a way? This is RIM actually providing a service for other non-BlackBerry phones. He says, would this be a way for RIM to be able to offer an app for iOS or Android that would allow people to use an iPhone or Android device and still be able to get their corporate email over the BlackBerry app with all the BlackBerry email features that they offer? Could be a good way to continue to win corporate contracts for expensive BlackBerry servers for corporate email and allow companies to enable their employees to get whatever smartphone they want. I think it's more them competing with Microsoft as a, you know, as a service provider for corporate email, saying, hey, we're going to work with all phones and all devices so that you don't have to be on with the BlackBerry system.
Yeah, but the BES stuff that BlackBerry provides integrates with your Exchange server from Microsoft anyway. So, you know, I mean,
well, then maybe
they have a great brand, and I could see this being a way for them to stick around for sure.
I think they're trying to say I think Kent's absolutely right. They need to hedge their bets. And this is definitely a way of doing it, saying, hey, we're good at this cloud thing. Let's expand on that. And I do think they're going to try to drive Microsoft out of it.
Yeah, they do have a great service. I'm kind of weary of how they would be able to implement it when some of the other handsets don't have the features that would be necessary to have the full suite, for example, Android, with the lack of full disk encryption.
All right, that's it for this edition of Tech News Today on this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And big thanks to Dr. Mom for joining us at the top and helping us understand a little more. Give to your American Cancer Society if you're in America, or your local cancer society elsewhere. We will see you tomorrow. The doctor is in.
Get him!
Yeah! 200 points!
You know what? This is so live action reality show right here.
Is this the pattern?
This is the movie. This is the show right here.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, this is the show.
I'm rooting for the yellow guy.
I'm rooting for the blue guy. Almost got him! No, not orange. No!
Get him!
Oh, he died. Good.
Yum, 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 yum,